We are ready to begin. This week we are learning Perek Yud, but since it is a large Perek, we're going to aim to learn half of it, or a chunk of it, not aim to finish the entirety of it. It's a big Perek. There's a lot that happens in the Perek, so we'll focus on the first half of the Perek, and we'll begin with the opening few psukim. In fact, the first section, if you will, of the Perek is the first seven psukim, where, as a brief overview, after the Givonim made their peace with Yehoshua, and they had done so, as we saw last week, through some form of deceit, but now the Navi describes that Adoni Tzedek, king of Yerushalayim, hears first how Yehoshua conquered Ai. He destroyed it as he had done to Yericho. And then he heard further that the residents of Givon made peace with the Jews and now live peacefully among them. And that frightened him and all the others, because Givon, the Navi describes in Pasuk Beis, was a city full of warriors. It was a militarily very powerful city, and if they're terrified enough to make peace with the Jews, that did not bode well for the other city-states of Eretz Canaan. And so Adoni Tzedek, king of Yerushalayim, takes the initiative, and Pasuk Gimel, we're told that he sends a message to four other kings, the king of Hebron, the king of Yarmus, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon, and he says to them in Pasuk Dalid, Alu Eli v'Izruni, come with me, assist me, v'nakes Givon, so that we can strike at Givon. They're not looking to strike Bnei Israel. They're looking to punish Givon, to intimidate all others who might harbor any thoughts of making peace with the Jews. Today we call this collaborators in the Palestinian vocabulary. Punish the collaborators who want to make peace with their enemy. So that's what Adoni Tzedek wants to do as well. Punish Givon for making peace with the Jewish people. And in Pasuk Hey, we're told that all of these five kings, they're referred to as Malchei Ha'Emori, gathered together with their armies. They camp out opposite Givon, and they waged war with Givon. And now, just to add to your comment from before this year, in a striking development, Givon now turns to Yehoshua for help. Now, Yehoshua could have easily said, I'm not going to attack you, I'm not going to conquer you. We made a peace treaty, albeit under dubious circumstances, but I'm going to take a passive approach and sit back, and whatever happens between you and them, that's your business. And that might have been morally, ethically defensible. And yet, remarkably, when the Anshei Givon send a message to Yehoshua in Pasuk Vav, appealing to him, Al teref yodecha me'oivecha, don't allow your hand to weaken, don't be passive with regard to your servants, meaning the Anshei Givon, Alei eleinu mehera, rush toward us. Now, where this is a 911 call here, the Hoshia lanu v'azreinu, save us and help us. Kinik b'tzu eleinu kol malchei hamori yoshvehar, because the malchei hamori of the mountainous region have waged war against us. Now, once again, if you're Yehoshua, this was potentially a dream come true. Civil war between your two enemies. Let them take care of themselves, and then I'll wait for the dust to settle. I'll have much easier time marching through Eretz Canaan. After all, Givon is full of Giborim, as the Pasuk described them back in Pasuk Beis, strong warriors, and the Malchei Mori, they are waging war against them. What could be better for the Jewish people? Let Givon and the Malchei Mori battle it out to the very end. They'll both weaken themselves significantly, and Yeshua B'nai Yisrael have a much easier time. And that's on top of the fact that Givon deceived B'nai Yisrael and attained peace under dubious circumstances. It would be so defensible on an ethical, moral basis to say, I'm staying out of this, you deal with it yourself, we'll talk tomorrow. And yet, and this again touches upon that significant muster that we mentioned last week of Kiddush Hashem, Chil Hashem, a higher Jewish ethical standard, in Pasuk Zion without even communicating back to them. He just responds with action. He doesn't send back a message. Okay, tell me what's happening. Let's discuss. I'll meet you next week. Vayal Yehoshua min Gilgal, hu v'chol am ha-melchama ima v'chol gibor echayel. He immediately responds with action. He immediately travels from Gilgal to Givon with the entire army, all the warriors. So just again, this musar of the higher ethical standard that the Jewish nation holds itself to, Kiddush Hashem, preventing Chil Hashem, in this case as well, putting themselves in harm's way. Once again, fighting war is never a safe enterprise. And yet, Yeshua is doing this for the Givonites because our word is our word and we stick to it no matter what. A remarkable musar, this story itself. If we look back now for a moment, just at the opening pasuk, Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph. Look back at the opening pasuk, and there's another fascinating comment to share here. And that is that if you noticed, Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim, he's called Adoni Tzedek. His name incorporates the term Tzedek, righteousness. We know from Parshas Lech Lecha that the king of Yerushalayim there is named Malki Tzedek. Obviously a different person, and yet the same term Tzedek incorporated in his title. It's not a coincidence. And none other than Ramban Ala Torah and Parshas Lech Lecha makes note of this fact that the kings of Yerushalayim apparently all shared this in common, that they had this phrase Tzedek appended to their name, Malki Tzedek, Adoni Tzedek. And the question is, what is the significance of that? So we look back for a moment in Parshas Lech Lecha at the Ramban, Perek Yedal Pasuk Yudches, and Ramban there tells us the following. Ramban says that the reason why the term Tzedek is used to refer to the kings of Yerushalayim, and these are the non-Jewish kings. Granted, Chazal tells us that Malki Tzedek was Shem ben Noach. Okay, but Pasha Pshat, certainly here with Yeshua, it's not a Jewish king. And Pasha Pshat and Pasha's Lech Lecha, it was just a king of Yerushalayim. He's called Malki Tzedek. This king is called Adoni Tzedek. And Shalom Ramban tells us we know is Yerushalayim. Here in the Navi, it's referred to specifically as Yerushalayim. Why is this? Ramban writes remarkably, Ki me'az yadu hagoyim, the non-Jews always knew, ki hamakom hahu, that city, mivchar hamakomos, is the choicest of geographic locations on the earth. Oh, or perhaps, sheyadu ma'alaso b'kabbalah. Perhaps they had a tradition that there's a spiritual significance and a quality to Yerushalayim more so than any other city. Namely, he writes this, shehu mechuvan keneged beis hamikdash shalmala, that Yerushalayim is directly opposite the holiest place in heaven, the beis hamikdash shalmala, shesham shechinaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the shechina of God resides. So Ramban is telling us that the reason why the kings of Yerushalayim, the non-Jewish kings of Yerushalayim, all had the term Tzedek appended to their name, Malki Tzedek, Adoni Tzedek, is because Tzedek, says Ramban, righteousness. The ultimate righteousness is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Tzedek is a reference to God. And Yerushalayim being the seat of God's Shechina on earth, which even the Goyim had a tradition to acknowledge and accept and to recognize, therefore Yerushalayim has that term Tzedek as a descriptive term, such that the kings were called Malki Tzedek and Adoni Tzedek. So even the non-Jews, says Ramban, always knew Yerushalayim was the most special place on earth in a spiritual sense as well. And no, that's presumably why, over the course of history, the world's greatest religions, greatest in terms of numerical significance, have always turned to Yerushalayim as a city they're attracted to. People recognize the significance of Yerushalayim, even if they don't realize why they recognize it, but that's the fact, the Ramban tells us, has always been a part of world history. Now, one more point on these first seven psukim to make note of. The Malbim has an interesting comment. When the Anshe Givon in Pasuk Vav appeal to Yehoshua for emergency assistance. Notice they use two different verbs in what they are requesting. They say in Pasuk Vav, Ale Eleinu Mehera, quickly come to us, V'hoshia lanu, which means to save us, V'azreinu, and assist us. Hoshia lanu, V'azreinu. Malbim comments, what is the difference in Lashon HaKodesh? Malbim is renowned for always finding the subtle differences between seemingly synonymous words in Lashon HaKodesh, but he, of course, is of the belief that there are no such thing as synonyms in Lashon HaKodesh. Every word has a subtle, distinctly different meaning than something else that seems similar. So he writes here, what is the difference between Hoshia and Azreinu? Or I'll post you this way, Melech Ozer U'Moshia in Shmona Esrei. Melech Ozer U'Moshia. What's the difference? So we ask Hashem, An Hashem Hoshiana, and sometimes we ask Hashem for Azreinu Elokei Yishenu in Shacharis. Azreinu, end of Tachanun. Azreinu Elokei Yishenu. Advar Kavod Shemecha, etc. What's the difference between these two verbs? Says the Malbim very interestingly. He says the difference is when you speak of Moshia, Yeshua Hashem, that term means that the Moshia, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we speak of Yeshua Hashem, or in this case, Yehoshua and Klal Yisrael, who are the Moshia for the Givonim, the Moshia is the one who does everything. Whereas an Ozer, says the Malbim, is one who lends assistance. The way he writes it is, Ha'ozer, Ozer Ktsas, but the Ne'ezar, the one who's receiving the assistance, is the main active one, is the primary active one. So, Mom says, Pshat the Pasuk is like this. The Gibbonim are asking Yeshua, ideally, V'hoshia lanu, you do it all, come and rescue us. At the very least, V'azreinu, if you're not willing to do that, at least give us some assistance and we'll be the primary fighters here. That's how he understands Hoshia lanu, do it all for us, or at the very least, V'azreinu, help us in some small way and we'll do the rest. Perhaps then when we say in Shmona Esrei, Melech Ozer U'Moshiyom again, Kadosh Baruch Hu first gives us assistance, and when necessary, Moshia, Kadosh Baruch Hu then does it all whenever necessary for us. The Sefer Mishpat Zav has a fascinating ha'ara. He says he heard this pshat. I don't think he tells us where he heard it from, but it's a beautiful, fascinating insight. He says, based on this interpretation of Malbim, the difference between the word Hoshia and the word Azreinu, Yeshua versus Ezra. He says, amazing. Who were the leaders of Klal Yisrael who brought Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael the first time around and the second time around? Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni. Who leads the conquest right now of Eretz Canaan, the first time the Bnei Yisrael enter? Yehoshua. Yehoshua is a word, a name that's related to Hoshia, Yeshua. The leader of Klal Yisrael who brought them into the second Bayis Sheni return to Eretz Yisrael was none other than Ezra. Ezra, certainly phonetically related to the word Ozer, Ezra, help, assistance. So based on this Malbim, the significance and symbolism of those two different Manhigim of Klal Yisrael in those two different periods of history is fascinating. In the times of Yehoshua, the Bnei Yisrael conquered Eretz Canaan in a most miraculous fashion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then was leading the charge, so to speak, he always leads the charge, but was visibly involved in supernaturally conquering Eretz Canaan. The walls of Yericho just crumbled to the floor. And we'll soon see in the rest of this parak the battles against these five Amori kings. Remarkable supernatural nisim. We'll read about it very shortly. Massive boulders falling from heaven on top of the enemy. Even as the enemy flees, the falling stones follow them. Despite the Jews pursuing them, the stones keep moving with the enemy, so they keep falling on the enemy. The sun stops in the middle of the sky. The day extends on for hours and hours and hours. The moon stops in the middle of the night sky and allows its illumination to assist the Jews as they continue to fight their battle. The entire conquest of Eretz Canaan under Yeshua was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hoshia, Yeshua Hashem, I'm doing it all, B'derech Nes. Masha'ein came when the Jews returned for Bayis Sheni under the leadership of Ezra HaSofer. That was an Ezra. That was a Kadosh Baruch Hu was assisting. Clearly, behind the scenes, how the Persian kings gave the Rishus to Klal Yisrael to come back to build the Bayis Sheni. Obviously, it was all Hashgacha coordinating it, but it was behind the scenes. It was more B'derech HaTeva, it would appear. They came back with the Rishus of the Persian kings, slowly, naturally. That was an Ezra. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a little assistance, a little, so to speak, but we did a lot of the primary active work, so to speak. So beautiful, fascinating pshat in this symbolism of those two different names, two different manhigim, Yeshua and Ezra, along the lines of this Malbim's explanation of the difference between the words Hoshea and Ozrenu. Fascinating pshat. Okay, so let's move on now. And we look now in the next series of psukim in Perek Yud. And now, looking in Perek Yud, Pasuk Ches, HaKadosh Baruch Hu now, as the Jews are approaching the battlefield, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yeshua, don't be afraid, I have delivered them into your hands, no man will stand from them before you. Pasuk Tes, Yeshua and Klal Yisrael journey through the night, I guess to surprise the enemy at morning. They come from Gilgal through the night, and then Pasuk Yud, Kadosh Baruch Hu throws the enemy into confusion, and Bnei Yisrael strike them, a significant defeat. Bnei Yisrael pursue them and keep on inflicting casualties until Azekah, until Makeda. And now in Pasuk Yud Aleph, we find this supernatural description how as the enemy is running, Vayehi ben Usam mipnei Yisrael, b'morad Beis Charon, as the enemy is fleeing down the slope of Beis Charon, Kadosh Baruch Hu casts upon them avanim gedolos min hashamayim. Huge boulders from heaven come falling down upon the enemy. Now the Mitzvot translates this as avnei barad, as massive hailstones. Okay, that could be the one interpretation of it. But massive rocks or stone-like projectiles fall from heaven upon the enemy. And as I referenced a moment ago, the Pasuk says that this is happening as they're fleeing all the way until Azekah, which the Mefarshim explain, the Malbim explains that as the enemy is running, the stones are following them. So they're falling from the heaven specifically and precisely upon the enemy as they're fleeing, whereas the Jews who are running after them are completely impervious to the stones. The stones are moving with the enemy. So just to add to the remarkable nature of the nace. this is the Malbim writes this. He says, the fact that hailstones might fall and kill people, that's natural. That happens every so often. But that it should move along with a specific target, that's, of course, supernatural. That's how the Malbim explains the significance of this nace over here. The Psukim then tell us that, first of all, more of the enemy died from the Avnei HaBarad. So here it's explicit. Avnei HaBarad, stones of hail. Me'asher Hargu Bnei Yisrael B'charev, from the numbers of enemies who died at the sword. And after describing this miraculous divine assistance in the battle, so the Pasuk now tells us in Pasuk Yud Beis, Oz Yedaber Yehoshua LaHashem B'yom Teis Hashem Es Ha'amori L'fnei Bnei Yisrael. On that day, when God delivered the Amori before Bnei Yisrael, Yeshua now speaks to God. Rashi tells us Yeshua says Shira, much like Moshe Rabbeinu did. Yeshua now says Shira. Vayomer le'enei Yisrael, but he declares out loud in front of the Jewish nation, Shemesh begivon dom v'yoreach be'emak ayalon. Yeshua, and the Malbim makes a point of stressing this point, Yeshua is not asking God for something. Yeshua is decreeing, and not just in conversation with God, but in the presence of all of the Jewish nation. He's decreeing, the sun shall stand still. Dom, Mefarshim say, means to wait, not to keep on moving as we see it in the sky. And the moon, so the sun shall stand still in Givon, and the moon shall also stand still in the valley of Ayalon, such that obviously the Jews should have additional time of daylight to conquer their enemy. They should have additional benefits of moonlight to also inflict further harm on their enemy. And the pasuk then inserts, the Malbim explains in Yud Gimel, Vayidom Hashemesh v'yireach hamad, that in fact happened. The sun waited, the moon stood still. And now comes the second phrase of what Yeshua declared or decreed, as Malbim explains it. The first half of pasuk Gimel is like an insertion, editorial insertion, and now we continue Yeshua's declaration. Ad yikom goy oivav, that this should happen, in other words, the sun and the moon should cease movement until the nation, the Jewish nation, has the opportunity to completely take revenge against their enemies. Because this is the miracle that occurs based on Yeshua's declaration alone. And the Radak explains the two locations here. Shemesh be-Givon. Oh, we know Givon is where the battle started. That was in Givon. Yireach be-Emek Ayalon, and the Yireach in the valley of Ayalon. So the Radak explains that Gibbon was in the territory of Binyamin. Ayalon was in the territory of Dun. So what happened was, says the Radak, is that they began the war in Gibbon. The enemy fled all the way to Ayalon. In Gibbon, it was the middle of the day. The sun was at the middle of the sky. Yeshua davened, says Radak, or declared that the sun should stand still. God honored that request. The sun stood still at the midpoint in the sky, and it stood still long enough, says Radak, kiyom tamim, like the length of the longest day of the year. Take the long summer days of the year, and that is how long the sun stood still, says Radak. And then when the sun set, at that point, the Jews had already pursued the enemy to Ayalon. The moon was brightly radiating at that point, says Radak, perhaps because it was the beginning of the month or maybe a third of the way through the month. So the moon was, I guess, a waxing moon. And that also, Yeshua davened, the moon should continue to illuminate so they continue to wage war, which it did and they did. Now, the Navi in Pasuk Yud Gimel just tells us, Halo Hiksuva al Sefer Hayashar. This miracle is referenced in the Sefer Hayashar. What is Sefer Hayashar? So Rashi tells us, Sefer Hayashar means the Torah. This is written in the Torah. Where do we find this written in the Torah? So Rashi says, because in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov gave Yosef brachos for his sons, he says in reference to Ephraim, the Zaro, the children of Ephraim, Yihya Meloha Goyim, will become widely known amongst all the nations of the world. Ephraim's descendants, which refers to Yehoshua, who is from Ephraim, will become famous throughout the world. And when did that happen? When did he earn that worldwide fame? Right here, when everyone was talking about this miraculous, supernatural feat that Yehoshua pulled off. So that's what the pasuk means when it says this is referenced in Sefer Hayashar. It's referring to the Torah, but specifically to Sefer Bereishis, where Yaakov Avinu makes this prediction about the descendants of Ephraim being Melo Hagoyim. And this is, in fact, a Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf Hei, where the Gemara asks, my Sefer Hayashar, what does this pasuk mean, Sefer Hayashar? Well, the truth is that the Gemara says, Ze Sefer Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, that this is the Sefer, Sefer Yashar is the Sefer of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, meaning, specifically, Sefer Bereishis. Okay, so the Gemara of Rezod Av Chafhei, in defining what Sefer HaYashar is, and this is where Rashi gets his explanation from, says it's a reference to the Sefer of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, meaning Sefer Bereishis. That's what the Gemara says in commenting on these words in Sefer Yoshua. Now, there is a fascinating and famous explanation of the Netziv, which I gave you in the handout. It's so, so important to just to see this Netziv inside. We'll highlight parts of it. It's just a very, very significant interpretation of the Netziv with a significant Musar message as well. I will try to share my screen for the first time in these series of Shiurim so that those who are virtually can watch as well. Let's try this. One moment. Okay, I hope that works. Barbara, since I can see you, can you give me a thumbs up if you see that screen, the share screen? Yes, thank you. Perfect. Okay. Fantastic. All right, so this is a page taken from the introduction of the Netziv to his commentary on Chumash, and it is most, most significant. The Netziv writes here, in the first paragraph, again, I'll read some lines inside, but some I'll just briefly summarize outside. The first paragraph, he says that Sefer Bereishis is referred to by the Nevi'im, specifically our Navi right here, Sefer Yeshua, as Sefer HaYashar. And he quotes the Gemara of Azar we just mentioned, Av Chaf Hei, that this is the Sefer of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's a reference to Sefer Bereishis because they, the Avos, are called Yesharim. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are called Yesharim. So Sefer Bereishis, which is primarily focused on the lives of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, is called Sefer HaYashar. And the Tziv wants to know, why is it that the description that is used for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is Yashar? I could have thought, says in the Tziv, of many other descriptions to use to describe Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. I could have called them Tzadikim. I could have called them Chasidim. And yet, what does the Pasuk refer to them as? Yesharim. What is significant about Yesharim as an adjective for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And in fact, the Tziv makes reference to the fact that Bilam himself describes the Avos with this term, Yesharim. Bilam says, Tomos Nafshi Mos Yesharim. He envied the death of the Yesharim, of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And again, the question is, why are they called more so than any other adjective by the term Yesharim? So the Netziv, in the second paragraph, writes that in Sefer, in Parshas Ha'azinu, the Pasuk says, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, the rock, meaning God, is perfect in his actions. Tzadik v'yasharhu. God is a tzadik, and he is yashar. Again, those adjectives, tzadik, righteous, and yashar. What does yashar mean? So the Tziv here, on the basis of this pasuk, says that the pasuk here, when it refers to God as just, the God is perfect in his behavior, he is tzadik v'yashar, that's specifically a reference to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. That although it was the most horrific, cataclysmic, tragic event in Jewish history, perhaps up until the Holocaust, if not more so, hard to compare what exactly was worse, but certainly it was one of the most cataclysmic, tragic events that ever occurred in Jewish history. So the Torah says that God, despite the Churban Bayis Sheni, is still referred to, and we acknowledge him as Tzadik V'Yashar. What's Pshat? So the Tziv explains like this. He says that Bayis Sheni was a generation of Dor Ikesh Ufsaltol, the Pasuk says in Hazinu. It was a generation of Ikesh Ufsaltol, of crookedness. In what sense? And Siv explains, and here's the key line, in third line of the second paragraph. And Siv says that this means as follows. Uperashna, we explained, Shehayu Tzadikim V'Chasidim V'Amalei Torah. The Jews in Bayis Sheni were righteous. They studied Torah. They were pious. Ach lo hayu yesharim. They were not yesharim. What does that mean? Bahalichos olamam. In their interpersonal interactions. Learning Torah day and night. They were great. Tzadikim, chasidim, unbelievable. But ben adam lachaveiro, yashar, that was lacking. And he says, Al Kain, therefore, mipnei sinas chinam shebelibim zazeh, they had a hatred for each other. And as a result, chashtu es misha ro'u, shenoheg shlo kedaitam, b'yiras Hashem, they saw another Jew who conducted himself differently than what they thought was the appropriate approach with regard to Yiras Shemayim, they immediately suspected him, Shutzduki v'apikoros. Oh, he doesn't take my approach in Yiras Hashem, he's an apikoros. That was the attitude. Ubo'u al yedeza yedei shvichas damim. That's what led to killing one another. But he says specifically, by labeling that Jew as an apikoros, that gave them religious justification for the harm they caused that individual. And he says this was what led to all of the terrible crimes they committed against one another, all because of the sinas chinam. Meaning it all started there. It started because they were righteous, pious, lomdei Torah, but when they saw another Jew who conducted himself differently as far as Yiras Hashem is concerned, they wrote him off. Oh, it's not because. Wrote him off. And once they wrote him off, well, then that justified in their mind the terrible mistreatment that resulted between one and another. What comes to mind just off the top is, I might have referenced this previously, Rabbi Avishai David writes how when he first moved to Israel on Aliyah a number of decades ago, so he had planned to enroll his children in a yeshiva, which had a strong secular studies program, along with the Bagriot graduation high school matriculation exams, which is not accepted in the Haredi world, in the right-wing world. Yeshiva happens to be for very serious B'nai Torah. It's not what you'd call modern Orthodox, but it still has this very strong secular education and Bagriot matriculation exams, and in the Haredi world, they don't accept it. So one of Rabbi David's relatives, who was not in favor of him sending his sons there, took Rabbi David to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach to present his case against sending these boys to that yeshiva. And he told Shlomo Zalman that yeshiva is not in accordance with our hashkafa. And Shlomo Zalman said to him, and since when do you own a monopoly on the right hashkafa? In other words, and there's no question if Shlomo Zalman did not send his boys there either. I mean, they were older, obviously, but whether he himself would have sent his boys there is irrelevant. The point was, is that just because you have one Ashkafa does not mean that's the only right Ashkafa. You can't claim, oh, they don't follow our Ashkafa, therefore we write them off. No, he has the right to send his boys there. You're right to send your boys here. There's no one and one only Ashkafa that can be said as this is the right Ashkafa and everyone else is off the charts. You don't have a monopoly on Hashkafa. That comes to mind reading this Netziv here, how during Bayis Sheni, when they were Chassidim and Tzaddikim and Omlei Torah, but they saw someone else who was conducting himself with a bit of a different approach when it came to Yiras Shemayim, they wrote him off. Oh, he's not Bikoros. And that's why they were lacking in Yashrus, says Netziv. They were not called Yesharim. And so if you turn to the second page now, Netziv says that when we declare in Parshas Hazinu, Tzadik v'yasharhu, that God is just in everything he does, why are we saying that God is yashar? So in Tziv writes, top of the page, page 28, he says, Shakadosh Baruch Hu yasharhu, because God is a yashar, meaning, v'eino sovel tzadikim ka'elu. God has no tolerance for such tzadikim, which is a fascinating phrase. You know, in my mind, I'm a tzaddik. I'm doing everything right. I'm a tzaddik, I'm a chassid, I'm a lomei Torah. But if my tzidkus is such that I have no tolerance for anyone else who has a different approach, God has no tolerance for such tzaddikim either, meaning the intolerant type. Ela ba'ofen shehochim b'derech yashar, gam b'halich ha'olam. God only approves of those who are yashar in their interaction with others as well. And even though they're doing l'shem shemayim, says in the tziv, God has no tolerance for them if they are not yashar in their interaction with others, because that is what caused Churban Yishuv Haaretz, which is a remarkable, harsh, and forceful comment to say. So now, coming back to Sefer HaYashar, so why is Sefer Bereishis, which is the Sefer of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, called Sefer HaYashar? Says Netziv, "Bezeh hayashavach avos." So in the next paragraph, that's why the avos are described as yashar above everything else. Of course, they were tzaddikim. Of course, they were chassidim. Of course, they were ovei Hashem in the most perfect way possible. But on top of all of that, they're yasharim. Meaning, says Netziv, "Hainu shehesnahagu im umos haolam." Their behavior with the umos haolam. Afilu ovde alila muchuarim, even the pagans, the idol worshippers, but their behavior with them, hayu imam ba'ahava, was a loving interaction. The chashu l'tavasam, and they cared for the benefit and the welfare of others, of ovde avodah zarah as well. Basher hi kiyum habriyah, because that's what keeps the world going. He says, look how Avram davened for the residents of Sodom. Clearly, he hated their sinful behavior. They were corrupt in every which way. He hated their king because of their wickedness. But he wanted them to survive. He wanted their lives to be spared. So a remarkable combination. And Siv quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim. Ahavta tzedek, God says to Avram, you love righteousness, vatisna resha, you hate evil. Meaning, Ahavta letzadik es briyosai, you love to exonerate or justify my creations, my people that I've created. Umeanta lechayvan, you refuse to convict them in the court of law, to hold them guilty. That's why Avram is the Av Hamon Goyim. Beautiful pshat. Why is he Av Hamon Goyim? Because sometimes when you have a father who has a son who is not conducting himself properly. The son is a wayward son. He's doing things that the father is embarrassed about and is horrified by and is just so ashamed of. But the son, nonetheless, wishes the best for his son. It's his son. No matter what the son does, father cares for the son. So too, Avram is Avamon Goyim. There might be residents of Sodom who are Rishayim, but he wants them to be spared. He wants the best for them. The same way, Avram was so sensitive to Lot, even though he wasn't the best behaved. We look how Yitzchak Avinu, says Netziv, was so quick to make peace with his enemies, with Avimelech. We look at Yaakov, how quick he was, despite being angry with Laban, how quick he was to come to a peaceful resolution with Laban. So this is the Halichos Olam of the Avos. This is why they're called Yesharim. And that's why Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYashar. It's a beautiful, beautiful shot of the Netziv, which, again, so, so important in terms of the Musar Shebo. How to treat, number one, not just Jews who have a different approach in Yiras Hashem, but even Ovdei Avodah Zarah. How the Netziv says there has to be an Ahava for all people of God's creation. And just to conclude for today, Pasuk Yedalid, because this is the end of a paragraph in the Navi. The Navi then says, "V'lo haya kayomahu lefanav ve'acharav." There never was a day like this, neither before nor afterward. L'shmo Hashem bekolish, that God would listen in such a way to a mere human. Ki Hashem nilcham liYisrael, that God is fighting for Israel. Now Malbim explains, of course, there were times before and after when God accepted the prayers and the appeals of people who prayed to him. But here what was unique, says the Malbim, is that Yeshua didn't daven to God. Yeshua turned to the Jews and declared, the sun will stand still and the moon will stop moving. So in that sense, it was unique. In that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it wasn't even a tefillah. It was a gzeirah that the Navi declared, referencing the sun and the moon, and God accepted the Yeshua's gzeirah. And secondly, says the Malbim, what was unique about this miracle is that usually or often a miracle is to be mekadesh shem shemayim, it's to highlight the prominence of Klal Yisrael, or it's to save Klal Yisrael from an enemy. But here, the sole purpose of this miracle was just that everyone should know God is waging our war. So it wasn't primarily Kiddush Hashem, even though it certainly was a result and a consequence of it. It wasn't primarily save Klal Yisrael, which of course it did. I guess that could have been achieved b'derech hatev as well. But the sole purpose of this nes, the primary objective of this nes, was just to show everyone else, God is fighting our wars. And in that sense, this was a unique, unique, unique miracle, which the Navi says never occurred before and never occurred later. And again, the remarkable Musar for us to take from the reference here to Sefer HaYashar and the sensitivity of Yeshua to Kiddush Hashem and to Chil Hashem, his willingness to quickly rush to assist his allies, the Givonim. We'll conclude here. Thank everyone for joining. Once again, have a wonderful week.